House Committee on General Government, and I'm going to do a quick change in the order of the agenda in order to accommodate some folks who have to be elsewhere soon, and I'm going to open first the public hearing on House Bill 3329. Kara, do you want to go over this new bill for us?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3329 directs the Oregon State Board of Nursing to issue a registered nurse first assistance certificate to any nurse who applies for and meets the requirements established by the board for such a certification. It requires the board to adopt rules that include establishing procedures for management of application for and requirements necessary to qualify as an RN first assistant. The bill also requires health maintenance organizations and not-for-profit hospitals that have health care contracts for registered nurse first assistant benefits to make payments for service to registered nurse first assistants directly. So,
thank you. We have a panel who would like to speak to us on this. Martin, do you want to bring your panel up and let them introduce themselves?
Chair Berger, member of the committee, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Martin Taylor, and I'm here today representing both the Oregon Nurses Association and a national group known as the Association of Perioperative Registered Nurses. I helped draft House Bill 3329, and I'm here to assist my content experts if you have any questions about process or the bill. But largely, I'm here to let you know that our association supports this bill and that I have people who know more than I do sitting directly to the right of me.
Thank you, Martin. Please, go ahead.
Chairwoman Berger and committee members, good morning. My name is Deb Castle, and I'm a certified registered nurse first assistant in the Mid-Willamette Valley, and I'd like to thank you for this opportunity this morning to testify on House Bill 3329. For the benefit of those who may not know, a registered nurse first assist, or RNFA, is a registered nurse who has undergone additional education and preparation and training to assist the primary surgeon in cases where a second surgeon is necessary. That secondary care role is increasingly being filled nowadays by RNFAs. As RNFAs, our education and preparation is largely parallel to that of a physician's assistant, which some of you may be more familiar with. But what makes us unique is that an RNFA is trained first as a nurse in patient-focused care as well as the disease process. We're also independently licensed, and we carry our own malpractice coverage. In the last 3 years, the demand for RNFAs has been rapidly increasing, and unfortunately, while the need for our services has been increasing, the reimbursement has decreased. RNFAs have been recognized by the insurance industry as a recognized provider for many years. RNFAs, however, are not currently recognized in Medicare statutes, although we are a recognized provider of care. And in recent years, insurance providers have found a loophole in the payment for our services. Companies now cite that they follow Medicare guidelines, and as yet we are not listed in those guidelines, they feel that they're under no obligation to pay for the service that has been provided. These are the same insurance companies that paid for our services before. Assistants in surgery, whether they're MDs or DOs, PAs, or RNFAs, are allowed to bill 20% of the primary surgeon's fee for their services rendered. And as an RNFA, we typically do bill that 20%, but our average return on that billing is 13 to 20% of the initial 20% billed. So you can see that this is a pretty good deal for the insurance companies. Though the accepted standard of practice for many surgeries either require an assist or allow for one, meaning that the fee for such a service has been approved by the set fee for that surgery, companies are choosing not to pay because they're not compelled to. The reason that the RNFAs in the state are coming to you is to ask for your help in receiving payment for services that insurance providers are already expecting to pay. More than a dozen states over the last 3 years have passed third-party reimbursement for those of us who provide this vital service so that we can continue to do so. We're not asking for a new fee or assessment, simply the ability to receive payment for our services where it's already been approved. RNFAs are a necessary and vital provider of care in Oregon. We provide the services so that our patients receive the care that they deserve. Where there is coverage, we would like to be paid. So, thank you for your time. Does anyone have any questions of me?
Questions at this time? Why don't we wait till the rest of this panel, and then we'll entertain the whole group. Thank you.
Madam Chair and the committee, thank you for your time and attention to this matter. My name is Stephen Newman. I'm a orthopedic surgeon. I practice in Albany and am the Department of Surgery Chair at that hospital. I think I speak not only for myself, but I think I would be a good representative for most of the surgeons who practice in my community, and not just my community, but my adjoining communities, as I've seen a certain trend over the past 10 years, actually. Just to give you a little historical perspective, almost any surgery that's performed is handled by the primary surgeon and usually has an assistant who's there to not only provide his expertise or their expertise to the case, but also to be present in case a certain, for instance, a catastrophic emergency should occur in the case of the primary surgeon being unable to complete the remainder of the case. You need someone who can at least finish closing the wound or whatever needs to be done in order to get this patient safely out of the operating room without that kind of catastrophe occurring. Historically, we've assisted each other as surgeons. In the past, was a reasonable way for us to provide not only our expertise in the case, etc., but also to provide assistance to our colleagues. As time has gone on, it's been more and more of an imposition on our own personal time and our schedules to be able to assist our other surgeons. And I can tell you personally that I feel very encroached upon when I'm asked to assist another surgeon unless I think that they need assistance for some specific portion of a case that I may have expertise in myself. But to just go and assist and maybe hold a retractor or close a wound at the end of the case is not really what I would consider to be good use of my time. And I think that is the feeling of most surgeons or across the country right now, and I think that most surgeons are starting to, because of the reimbursement to assistants has gone down substantially, it is a poor use of our time. And in a busy surgical practice, which most surgeons are busy, it just adds to our load. Many surgeons will hire their own physician assistants to try to unburden that. Some surgeons are able to bill for those services in that setting. That's been one option, one way around this. We find, however, that in a rural area such as we practice in, and I think even when we talk about rural areas, I would talk about any area outside of the Portland, Salem, Eugene areas in Oregon. So any hospitals that are outside that, those three areas in our state would be classified, I think, as a rural hospital or a hospital that is underserved. We are stressed as far as our numbers. Very few hospitals actually are able to provide full-time emergency and surgical services. In our particular hospital, there are three of us who provide full-time trauma and emergency care to our hospital, which means that we're on 24 hours out of every 72 hours. If we needed to add to that coming in on our off days to assist in emergency surgery, that would basically put us on call almost all the time, and that's really not feasible. It would force many of us to just choose to not practice in this scenario. I think that this scenario exists throughout the state. Our malpractice crisis here is going to make that even more tenuous as time goes on unless we resolve that. But nurse first assistants have been essentially a godsend in this area. We're getting more of our nurses who are training for this. And I ran into a situation just a few years ago where I could not schedule surgeries because I did not have an assistant. And that is typically a requirement in most hospitals, that you do have an assistant. And if you don't have an assistant that you can schedule for a specific type of case, the surgery cannot be performed. So right now, one of the things that I struggle with is the fact that I ask first assistants to come in and assist me on many cases that are Medicare surgeries, where we're operating on a patient who's covered by Medicare insurance. These assistants come in for free. They spend 3 or 4 hours in the operating room, and they get paid no money at all because Medicare does not recognize them as an entity that needs to be paid. What's happening is, I think, is insurance companies are seeing that this may be a bandwagon they can jump on, and that shouldn't be allowed to happen. The opposite should be happening. We should be really trying to change the Medicare system so that they can be paid from a Medicare standpoint. These nurses are very skilled. What I've noticed in having nurses versus physicians is they do have this perspective of the patient's safety that is just heightened by the fact that they're nurses, and that's what nurses do. And it adds to the quality, I think, of the case. In no case have I ever encountered a situation in which they were inferior to what I would consider to be the other options, i.e. a physician or a physician's assistant. I would ask that you give your attention to this bill. I think it's an important aspect in trying to move or at least maintain some sort of stability in our current situation. I think if we lose our first assistants, it's going to be very difficult for us to go back to the old system of requiring physicians to come in and assist one another. I'm not sure that we will, as physicians, do that. And I guess I would close at this time if there's any questions.
Questions? Representative Buckley?
I'm gesturing towards my colleague there.
Representative, somebody has a Matt, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Cassell, could you please explain to me, what does an RN have to do to become an RNFA? Is there more education, experience?
Yeah, it's an additional 2 years education at an approved program. A program that's approved through the CBP, and I think that's the Certification Board of Perioperative Nursing.
2 years.
It's an additional 2 years, yes.
Thanks.
And 2,000 clinical hours.
Follow, please.
Yes.
Thank you. Then it's safe to say that in the position of RNFA, you're possibly a life-saving factor in the operating room. Is that true?
I would think so, yes, because as Dr. Newman stated, in the event that something catastrophic were to happen to the surgeon, then we've been specifically trained to, make that a safe situation for the patient, either by closing or stabilizing until the patient can be taken out of the operating room or another physician can be brought in.
Good, thank you. For clarification, you stated RNFAs are allowed to bill 20% of the primary surgeon's fee. In other words, if the surgeon charged $100, you would be able to bill $20.
Yes.
And yet you say that of that $20 that you bill the insurance company for, you only get 13 to 20% of the $20?
Of the $20, yes, sir.
Thank you.
Representative Cameron, do you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Newman, you mentioned you're required by certain hospitals to have two people in the operating room. Is that what I heard?
In certain operations. Not every operation, but in certain operations.
Okay. And you also said the old procedure that we're moving away from was to have another peer of yours there with you.
That's correct.
At those times, were we billing for the extra assistant surgeon's time?
And we had the same billing allotment, i.e. that physicians can bill for 20% of the primary surgeon's fee, although we are reimbursed at a much higher rate than the RNFAs are typically.
Okay.
In other words, if we bill 20%, most of the time we get 20% of whatever the surgeon gets paid.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
What you mentioned that Medicare doesn't recognize RNFAs. What's happening at that level?
Well, the status is 5 years ago, we were mandated, operating room nurses were mandated to provide a study that showed the cost benefit or savings of having RNFAs. That study was completed and brought back to the legislature, and they felt that the statistics when it came back 4 years later was too old. So then they sent it to MedPAC, which I believe is the body that helps them decide, you know, who to reimburse or, you know, what is reasonable and what is not. And recently, decision that came out of MedPAC was that while RNFAs paralleled PAs and other people that are, you know, paid as assistants in surgery, they could neither recommend nor not recommend that they be reimbursed. And so we're still continuing that struggle in Washington.
Further questions? Thank you very much for coming. I have to admit, Dr. Newman, that this is a different look of what's going on. The rest of us, when we're in the operating room, we're not aware of all of this, fortunately for us. And we appreciate your time and the time that you've come and described this to us.
Thank you. And thank you so much for your time. If you do have any questions that arise, please don't hesitate to give us a call.
We will.
Thank you.
We have Marilyn Hudson.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Marilyn Hudson, and I am the nursing practice consultant from the Oregon State Board of Nursing. First of all, I'd like to acquaint all of you with the actual mission statement of the Board of Nursing. The Oregon State Board of Nursing safeguards the public's health and well-being by providing guidance for and regulation of entry into the profession, nursing education, and continuing safe practice. The State Board of Nursing wishes to submit testimony in opposition to House Bill 3329 in regards to the mandated certification. We believe that House Bill 3329 is unnecessary from a public safety perspective and creates needless bureaucracy and costs for licensees. Section 2, number 1 of the bill requires the State Board of Nursing to issue a certification to act as a registered nurse first assistant to any nurse who meets the requirements established by the board. The State Board already recognizes this role through an existing policy. That policy is entitled Registered Nurses as First Assistants in Surgery. This policy acknowledges that it is within the role and the scope of practice for a registered nurse to perform the duties of the first assistant in surgery. Moreover, the RNFA's own professional organization, the Association of Perioperative Registered Nurses, also recognizes the RNFA role as being within the scope of practice for the registered nurse. RNs do not need to be certified by the State Board of Nursing to perform specific tasks within their existing scope of practice that they are already allowed to perform. And there is no precedent for issuing this sort of special certification. Further, numerous professional organizations currently provide certification for their members. The State Board does not have any evidence that this process is inadequate. If the precedent is set that the State Board of Nursing will certify special RN populations, there may be future requests by other RN groups, thus opening the door to all kinds of unnecessary certifications. The State Board of Nursing also was concerned about the costs that would be generated by adoption of this legislation. Costs associated with rule writing, credentials review during application or renewal of certification. There also could be costs related to compliance since House Bill 3329 includes title and scope protection. Lastly, the State Board of Nursing questions the appropriateness of this bill as a regulatory matter. besides establishing that RNFAs are included within the RN scope, the State Board of Nursing policy mentioned earlier fully articulates that RNFAs are included or fully articulates guidelines and expectations for the development and maintenance of competency. Therefore, there are no public safety concerns that would be further addressed by adoption of this bill. The only issue that would be resolved by legislation appears to be that of reimbursement for RNFA service. Although the State Board of Nursing understands this situation, the regulatory nature of this matter in regards to public safety is questionable. The State Board of Nursing does not have an opinion on reimbursement, but does oppose the state certification component of this legislation. Thank you for this opportunity to submit testimony.
Representative Buckley has a question.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your testimony. Do you know of any other precedent of healthcare employees in the state of Oregon not being compensated for their professional services?
I can't speak to reimbursement issues. That really isn't our regulatory concern as a general rule. That's why I wanted to share with you what we have written down as our mission statement. I'm not familiar with other state organizations.
One follow-up.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned the concern about paperwork and the cost of such. Since you already are in the process of certifying the qualifications of RNFAs, can you please identify for me what the additional cost would be?
We actually are not in the business already of certifying our RNFA. The RNFA right now is a registered nurse in the state of Oregon, like any other registered nurse, and they go through whatever special certifying process through their professional organization. The additional cost would come if, with adoption of this bill, there had to then be unique rules adopted and specific credentials review of those, which would be a precedent that has never before been in place with our state board regarding at the RN level.
Apologies for the wrong
answer. Did I not answer?
I think I used the wrong phrase.
Oh, okay.
You already have guidelines and expectations. I should use that phrase.
Yes.
Can you tell me what the additional cost would then be for certification to take your guidelines and expectations and move into a certification process?
We don't have a specific cost analysis done yet, but it would certainly be in the thousands of dollars to begin something, a process like this, and to continue it on an annual basis. I don't have a cost figure with me.
One more?
Would that be thousands of dollars per application or thousands?
No.
Thank you.
Probably not.
Representative Escobar, you?
Yes. Now, what this amounts to, the nurse gets paid by the hospital, is that correct?
I'm not sure I can speak to reimbursement, but I think that it's my understanding that these nurses are employed in a variety of ways, some perhaps by a hospital, some independently contracted. But again, I'm not entirely certain on that end of it, how all of those arrangements are made. I believe they're done in a variety of ways.
So in other words, this individual may be on a salary, may be on a salary, and then when they go into surgery, this is additional money for additional services. Is this what we're getting to?
You know, I'm sorry, I'm not really able to speak from the board's perspective on how reimbursement occurs. I simply don't know.
I think that Martin Taylor can address how this works on the ground, and I would invite him to come forward and do so.
Thank you very much, Chair Berger. To your question, Representative Escobar, you have RNFAs that are employed by hospitals, but increasingly the RNFA is becoming an independent contractor who contracts with physician groups who may have privileges at a number of hospitals or ambulatory surgical centers. And if they are employed by a hospital, then they rely on their salary. If this legislation passed, the reimbursement would then go to the hospital, and I think for that reason hospitals would probably benefit from this bill. But for those that are independent contractors, which is becoming more common, particularly in more rural settings where the physician group may have privileges at a number of small rural hospitals and they want to bring RNFAs with them, this is their payment mechanism. There is no salary at all for that person. They rely upon reimbursement.
Does that answer the question? Representative Cameron, did you have something?
Well,
I guess I do.
He asked me.
The board has no opinion on reimbursement. Personally, you get paid, I guess. Do you have any personal opinion on how we would suggest these people get paid for the services they provide? If this law...
It's my understanding that reimbursement is that there is reimbursement for some of these individuals, but there's simply no mandated reimbursement. So personally, I guess I don't know unless you choose that. Well, I guess I don't really have a personal opinion.
So the board's. I just want to clarify the board's opposition is because we don't want to have another class. Right now, there's only one class that the board certifies. That's RN.
What this would do right now, the only additional certifications that occur are at the advanced practice level. That means that someone has gone through a master's program and they're a nurse practitioner, a clinical nurse specialist, etc. That means that their scope is a different scope because it's according to that advanced practice category. By virtue of the definition of this role, it is still within the RN scope. Therefore, it's not considered an advanced practice scope. What the dilemma that we would really be dealing with is by opening this door at this level of certification, there are all kinds of other nurses who get special certifications in nursing, certified emergency nurse, critical care registered nurse, etc. The potential would be there for these various special groups of nursing who get certifications through professional organizations to come to the board and request their own special certifications. So it's the opening of the door that is of particular concern to the board.
Did we hear earlier testimony that there is 2 years of training that these people have to go through to be qualified? So there is some special training they have to go through?
Can answer.
That is correct. And this is, again, not according to a board certification because that doesn't exist. But the board has a policy to recognize RNFAs, which is different than statute. And that policy reflects the national standard for a professional accreditation or certification. But that's a different thing than statute. And that national professional standard is 2 years and 2,000 clinical hours. So essentially, in every way except for statute, we have a standard for what an RNFA is in Oregon, and that goes to a previous question that Representative Buckley asked, that we know who these folks are. Our dilemma with this bill was, according to counsel, you can't require reimbursement for somebody who doesn't exist in statute. So we sympathize with the board's position that you have potentially a very large number of certifications, but for us, it is different that this is the only way to reimburse these folks. So that's why we're doing what we're doing.
Representative Cameron.
Is there any other states that you know of that have done this to... I guess my concern as I'm pushing forward here is that what we've done in the past isn't working, and we need to fix it in our healthcare issue. And to encourage people to come to work in the healthcare field and open access, what the nursing board has done in the past maybe needs to be changed in the future, how we've looked at things and what we do. Is there any other states that have done some things that have been along this line to provide incentives for people to go to work as a person in the operating room?
I drew this bill together by looking at 10 different state statutes that all go to the same reimbursement issue. My understanding from my colleague who was here earlier, Deb Castle, is over a dozen states have legislation. So the answer to your question is that other states do this. I have discovered in the past working legislative council that not every state has the same expectation. Some states will, in fact, defer to national accreditation, where in Oregon we don't delegate state authority to national private professional bodies. So in Oregon, we rely upon the board for that function. And I think that's why this comes back onto the board's plate in Oregon, where in some of these other states, they just defer directly to a private group.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Representative Chair. Witt was first. Sorry. Taking a minute.
Sorry about that.
That's fine. Thank you, Madam Chair. Marilyn, thank you for your testimony. And I think my line of questioning is much in keeping with the questions that Representative Cameron just had. I'm trying to get a feel for the credentialing process, and I'm wondering if there is, if the credential, the certification, is actually enhanced by limiting the number of individual credentials within the specific RN certification.
I'm not sure I understand your question. What
is the value of that certification? The credential that I would receive as an RN, is that enhanced by not having subset credentialing within the RN field?
I'm still not sure I'm totally understanding your question, but let me
rephrase it if you would, if you can.
The certification process, in essence, is a credential to the rest of the world that says that I, as an RN, have the following set of skills and the following professional level of education. Would we in any way dilute that, the validity, the value of that certification, if we were to certify in a subset of RN fields?
If you were to certify other people besides the RNFA, or if you were to certify
RNFAs and then
RNFA.
Other subsets of RNs?
I don't see it as any kind of, I don't know that I would say a dilution process. What I would see it as is a lot of really unnecessary, a totally unnecessary process, in that right now there is a process to recognize these nurses through their professional organizations, and that to do so actually through a board and therefore in a regulatory way in some ways may actually be more limiting to the nurses, any group that would seek this, because then they are regulated. You can't have one that practices in that area without having met those certain credentials, and so in some ways it may be a bit more limiting. Does that answer your question, Representative Hood?
It does. A follow-up, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Does the State Board of Nursing have a policy that that it tries to restrict the number of credentials within a given field?
Not that I am aware of.
Thank you.
I had a question for Ms. Hudson. In your mission statement, it talks about safeguarding the public's health. And as I listened to the testimony of Dr. Newman talking about the shortage and the problem when RNFAs are not being reimbursed, and the fact that surgeons don't see it as a valuable use of their time to be an assistant, the fact that you can't require reimbursement unless RNFAs are recognized in statute and licensed, wouldn't it be in the interest of the public's health to have this kind of a certification, so indeed in rural areas we can have RNFAs that are actually reimbursed for their services?
Well, I think the issue here from the board's consideration would be that really that is not a regulatory concern from the board's perspective, that really what you're talking about is a reimbursement issue and not a public safety issue, in that there already is a mechanism here from the board's perspective through policy and also a certification process through the professional organization. The whole other issue of reimbursement really becomes, from the board's perspective, it really is not a public safety issue or a regulatory issue per se. It is a reimbursement issue, maybe something that's better handled in another fashion, but that's the board's perspective.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Martin, you want to respond here since you clearly have something to say on the subject?
I'll be very brief, Representative Berger, Representative Galicia. I think that while it is not the primary mission of this goal to deal with a public safety issue, that any time you have a certification process where a facility can know for certain that this person has been their credentials have been checked and approved by the board, it decreases the potential of someone falsely saying that they are an RNFA, which is possible under the existing system. So you do potentially have a public safety issue here as well.
I have a couple questions. You talked about advanced practice nurses, nurse practitioners, and what is the difference between their certification and a regular RN? And is there room in there?
And I'm sorry.
Is there room in there for some other sort of certification?
Actually, to first of all answer the first question about the difference, advanced practice nurses are folks who have gone through a master's degree or a master's level program with a master's degree in nursing that, or there are other components, other ways to get to it, but it's a master's preparation and prepared specifically as either a nurse practitioner, a certified registered nurse anesthetist, or a clinical nurse specialist. Those are the three categories within this state that are prepared at that educational level. The Association of the Perioperative Nursing Association, in their official position statement, they very clearly state and recognize that this role is within the RN scope, which means that it's not being recognized as an advanced practice role. Same thing within our policy. So that's sort of wherein we get the differentiation, is that one is already recognized as being something that is within the registered nursing scope and is not, therefore, an advanced practice role exclusively. So that's sort of the differentiation, if you will, and why we wouldn't consider it an advanced practice role.
So if I could step into this, wade into this, what basically we have is two nursing scopes, the advanced practice and the RN, within your world. And your objection then centers around the fact that you're pulling out one piece of this RN world and giving it a status or a separate treatment from the rest of the RN world. Is that...
That's correct, and thereby potentially opening the door to all different kinds of subgroups of RNs who have special additional education that is still within their scope. There are a number of many other nursing organizations and groups, certified emergency nurses and critical care nurses and so forth, that have their own additional certifications and education and so forth that get them to that place. So
Martin, in other states in your research, how do they deal with this? Do they have three-tiered systems? Do they separate out these nurses? How do other states deal with this? Surely we're not the only ones in this.
Well, and unfortunately, you've now reached an area where I'm not entirely confident to answer the question. My research on this has primarily been around how do other states deal with just the RNFA. But in terms of the question of do other states have, within the RN, numerous different certifications for subtypes of nurses, I don't know that. And Susan King were here, she would be able to give you a great sharp answer.
I'm sorry to put you on the spot for this.
You've detected one of my deficiencies here.
Okay. I think that if there are not further questions here, I think we may be hearing... I'm bothered that we are so close and yet so far in the sort of the different looks of this whole issue. So what I'd like is to have a little chance to digest and think about this, and we'll probably have further discussion. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, I would like to have that information if you could bring it to us.
Yeah, I certainly, our association can track that down.
And I would encourage the Board of Nursing to look at this and see sort of, is there some problem solving here that could be encouraged to get us there? Is there anyone else who has some need to come up here and talk about this issue? John?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Powell, representing Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. It depends on what need means.
Would you like to speak on this issue? Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'll be extremely brief. We've met with Mr. Taylor and the first assistant nurse that testified earlier today. Regents' policy is to reimburse first assistants, and we would like to see the development of this category of nursing. The bill needs some, on the reimbursement language, some changes in that section, and we'll work with Mr. Taylor and the association on that. As to the other part of the bill and the Board of Nursing's issue.
You don't need to wade into those waters, yeah.
But we do want to encourage the development of first assistance in this category of surgery.
Thank you. Questions? Yes, Dr. Cameron?
Can you just go into a reason why you want to encourage that development?
Madam Chair, Representative Cameron, there are a couple. One, there's going to be an assistant in surgery. For a surgeon to perform this role is most likely underutilization of their time. And it also can increase the cost of the surgery. So to have a category of trained personnel who are trained specifically for the potential of calamity and problems within that surgery is a more efficient use of healthcare dollars. So that's our reasoning. I have to tell you, there may be an unfortunate trend, as the doctor who testified said, with the malpractice problem of more and more doctors retiring early and wanting to do this at 20%. And that would not be a good trend for medicine and for the people who pay health insurance premiums.
Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you, John, for coming forward. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to close this public hearing on House Bill 3329, and thank you all for your testimony. And move to, let's 3067. I'm going to move to a work session on House Bill 3067. Kara, you want to remind us of what this is?
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the committee, HB 3067 adds animal control to the list of types of services that counties may provide via a service district. You'll recall that Representative Boone explained to us when she testified that there's a whole list in ORS, in statute, of what types of services counties may provide under a service district heading, but animal control is not one of them. And she was looking for a way that we might be able to assist three counties that presently are without animal shelters and might be able to look to a different funding
scheme. Okay, remember this? Representative Buckley?
Madam Chair, given the situation in our house, I think dog control would probably be a more accurate reflection. But I would like to move House Bill 3067 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Buckley moves House Bill 3067 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objection? So ordered. Representative Buckley, I would ask you to carry this, but I think I will offer it first to Representative Boone, if that's okay with you. And I will close this work session on House Bill 3067 and open a work session on House Bill 2916. Kara.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2916 eliminates the requirement for public libraries to maintain actual operating expenditures for library services to remain eligible for state financial assistance.
Okay, remember this one?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody want to move this? Representative Cameron.
I'll move that House Bill 2916 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cameron moves House Bill 2916 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Esquivel?
Yeah, maybe I've missed it in here, but I don't see it. It says it may have a physical. Oh, no, never mind. does have not. I have it.
Okay. Thanks for the question.
Well, see, I read the wrong one.
And that's fine.
Fiscal impact.
Better.
Then I find the other one that has no fiscal impact.
Okay. Any objection at this point? Without objection, so moved. And I'm going to, that House Bill 2916 goes to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Representative Cameron, would you like to carry that one for us?
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I'm going to close work session on House Bill 2916. Now I'm going to open a interesting bit of a possible reconsideration and work session on House Bill 2094. Representative Sumner.
Madam Chair, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2094.
Representative Sumner moves. Rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering House Bill 2094. I'd like to remind you that we passed this with a due pass as amended recommendation. However, there is a little error in the amendment language. We'd like to call Pat Allen to come up and explain it to us, if he would.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Patrick Allen with the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. My apologies for being here before you again two sessions ago when you first heard this bill. The issue is this. There was some language originally in the bill that had to do with an agency extending a license, being able to increase its fee in a way that was revenue neutral to match the extension of the license. And early on, we discovered that there were some agencies that had statutory continuing education numbers of hours. It would say in statute 12 hours per year or whatever. We told Legislative Council, we need that same language for the fees for it to apply to continuing education. And they gave us what we asked for, which was language that allowed agencies to multiply continuing education in a way that kept it revenue neutral, which sort of is beside the point of continuing education. So I think you've got -3 amendments to be able to consider if you act on the motion to reconsider that will fix that problem. And again, I apologize for not having caught that prior to your last consideration of this bill.
I will tell you that, members of the committee, there was hefty groveling in my office over this, and I did read the changes personally. Any questions? Representative Sumner.
Madam Chair, I move we reconsider the vote by which we passed House Bill 2094.
Representative Sumner moves we reconsider the vote by which we passed House Bill.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. Yeah. Did you vote on the motion to suspend the rules?
Oh, I better move first on the motion to suspend the rules and reconsider the vote on House Bill 2094. Any objection? No. So ordered. Now we're going to move the reconsider the vote. We just did that, okay? I think we just did that, did we not?
Yes, we just did.
Oh, we did. Yeah. Okay, you're off. I'm not. Okay. Now we're down to here.
Madam Chair, I move we withdraw the -2 amendment and replace it with a -3 amendment.
Okay, Representative Sumner moves we withdraw the -2 amendment, replace it with a -3 amendment to this bill. Any objections? No. So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2094 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
All right. Representative Sumner moves House Bill 2094 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Any objection? So ordered. And
Madam Chair.
Representative Sumner was going to carry it and now is going to carry it again.
Yes, ma'am. Did we need to specify -3 amendments on that?
No, we already approved the -3 amendment, so as amended language, I think we'll get us there. Am I correct, Kara?
Correct.
Thanks for the question, but we'll get there. I think that anyone reviewing this tape will get the idea pretty clearly of we are trying very hard to conform to all of the appropriate protocols. Thank you very much. I'm closing this reconsideration and hearing on House Bill 2094. It is my fervent hope that this is the last we're going to see of House Bill 2094 during this session, but there could be other sessions coming tomorrow or next week, and I am going to close this or adjourn this session of the meeting of the House General Government Committee, and thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.